first a couple of announcements. For today's classes, you should receive, first of all, a printout of the questions for the catechism on the Gospel of Life from questions 86 to 106. As I believe I've explained to you, it is impossible to do justice to the whole of the Holy Father's document on the Gospel of Life in class. We'll cover as much as we can verbally in class. I want to assure you, however, the full manuscript of the forthcoming book to be called Catechism on the Gospel of Life. You will receive all the manuscript contents of the Catechism. I believe I've asked you to read up to and including questions and answer 85. I want you then, for the parts we do not cover in class, as a matter of conscience, to read those sections from the part we will have finished in class up to the next class, but exclusive. For example, today we'll begin our class with question 86. I'm assuming, however, that you will have read the intervening questions and answers up to and including question 85. And as we've said more than once in these classes we're having here at Ann Arbor, there is nothing in my judgment that is more important for a Catholic today than to understand his or her faith. The most devastating crisis in the Church's history is going on in our century. Millions of once-believing Catholics are giving up their faith. And the logic behind it is that for a country like ours, which is so academically sophisticated, unless that same culture, being so highly, quotes, educated in everything else, unless that same culture grows in its understanding of the true faith, in its clarity, clearness of distinguishing one truth of the faith from another, unless that same educated mind acquires quantitatively knowledge about the truths of the faith. And fourthly, unless that same believing mind grows in its certitude, in its conviction, conviction in the mind, that strength of mind. Conviction of the will means fortitude in being willing even to lay down one's life for the faith we profess. Most of our 200 once Catholic colleges and universities are no longer Catholic. It is not an opinion. It is a hard and painful fact. Back then, to understanding what we are here teaching, and that will depend on yourselves, both between classes and even during class. What a difference between having an open ear, open ears, and not having an open mind. I've taught too many students over the years who have heard me with their ears, but did not open their minds to grasp what was being said. Then, those of you who have ordered copies of the Ordo, remember, the Jesuit Ordo, which contains the directives for Mass and Divine Office for every day of the ecclesiastical year, copies have been bought. And the price, I did not even look it up. It is now $6. $6. Since I have to pay the bill, please give me $6. And I'm not even charging you, pardon me, for the postage. Then I was reminded, and I think I should remind you, for the semester so far and until you finish this semester's class, the Xeroxing is being done, as you know, and while we have a Xerox machine, we keep buying paper, but it does cost money. The last thing I want is money as money, but I'm under vow of poverty and obedience. Maybe the best way, see what happens. What if I provide an empty box and then ask for your contributions? How's that? And again, pardon me, either cash or checks. Now the checks, this may surprise you. I live, as you know, at the rectory of Jesu Church across the street from the university. One of my agreements with my superiors for living at the rectory is that I would offer at least 2 weeks each month the 6:30 Mass. Well, in the month of November, whatever happened, I've got 4 weeks of 6:30 Mass in November. However, the cost of the office, facilities, and so on, if you make your checks payable to Inter Mirifica, that's spelled I-N-T-E-R, next word, Mirifica, M-I-R-I-F-I-C-A, Inter Mirifica. Thank you. Inter Mirifica is the organization that, well, I founded. We have a publishing house in Washington, D.C. And our main work is working for the Holy See. And Inter Mirifica depends exclusively, on contributions. So either cash, pardon me, I leave it up to your own conscience. How's that? Am I clear? To pay for the Xeroxing, and if you can't afford it, well, say a prayer. You have the money? Well, contribute. My apologies for bringing that mundane subject into class. Also, we have copies of, remember I told you that article that I wrote on mixed marriages? And were copies distributed to you or not? They are, I understand, however, they are available. And I'm not sure a price has been attached. Please?
$1.
Because same thing, what I did was to Xerox the article which I published, and most of my work for the last 25 years, including, by the way, being here, is under directives of the Holy See. And in 25 years, I don't see I've got to be paid $1 by the Vatican, even 1 lire. And there are 800 lire to an American dollar. All my transportation, everything, I've got to beg for the money I need. We are now going to go back to the course on the Holy Father's document, Gospel of Life. And we're beginning with question 86. Remember, and please, take it as a matter of conscience that whatever I give you to read, which we don't cover in class, please read. This manuscript will be published. But in the meantime, I'm providing copies of the magazine. Pardon me, the paperback, to be called Catechism on the Gospel of Life. Number 86. What is the deepest element of God's commandment to protect human life? The deepest element of God's commandment to protect human life is the duty to show reverence and love for every person and the life of every person. In other words, what has become what the Holy Father calls the culture of death. Hear it. Abortion has become an international crime legalized by most of the nations of the world. Why? Because these nations have failed in the practice of charity, of love. In the words of St. Paul, love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. We've heard this by now 1,000 times. Let's be clear in what we are saying, or what the Pope is telling us. Where love fails, hear it, and please don't forget. Where love fails, comma, cruelty takes over. Do you still hear me? A loveless society is a cliché. A loveless society does not exist. A loveless society is a cruel society. And how I was happy to read this some time ago, happened to be Phyllis Schlafly who made the statement. The feminist movement in the Western world is mainly the result of women no longer loving . And I have to say this, I'm not sure what the proportion of women to men is in class, but there is no hatred like that of a woman. And one reason is because God made women to love. That's the deepest need of a woman, to love. What's the deepest need of a man? To be loved. And a man had her better be loved by the mother who conceives him and brings him to birth and cares for him. Otherwise, well, we wouldn't have any men on earth. Believe me, Christ's commandment about loving one another as he has loved us is no pious cliche. 87. Strange question. How does ecology affect our respect for human life? Now we know that some ecologists have gone, let's say, haywire. The newspaper, at least I saw it recently in a newspaper, two boys were convicted and heavily fined for killing a young dog. Wish our country was concerned about the preservation of human life, as some people are about preserving animal life. Nevertheless, there is a valid ecology. Here's the question. How does ecology affect our respect for human life? Says the Holy Father, ecology as concern for preserving the environment has deep moral implications for the pro-life movement, preserving the, and now, physical, that's the tree, well, pardon me, say the soil. Almost one half of the United States is flat ground. And scientifically, one reason for the deadly hurricanes and tornadoes throughout the Midwest is because, well, thousands of square miles of leveled, passive voice land. So preserving the physical, the vegetative, trees, plants, and animal environment is a duty for the well-being and even the survival of human life. Why should that be? Because, as we know, our first parents, even before they fell, they were told, remember, to take care of the soil, to till the land, to grow food. And where does our food come from? Except from, well, casually called the environment. And this affects not just our country, but our countries too. The next class, let me bring a magazine that the environmentalists send me. I get all kinds of magazines for which I've never subscribed. This is one. And I am pleased to see that besides their concern about preserving, you know, the flowers of the trees and certain rare species of fish or squirrel, they're also finally, how happy I am, becoming concerned about preserving human life. Of course, there's no comparison between the duty we have to preserve human life and the relative, lesser, but nevertheless, duty also to preserve, say, animal life, a vegetative life, to preserve a soil that will still produce food. 88. How does the procreation of children in marriage belong to the gospel of life? This was in Tijuana, Mexico. I had a class with Mother Teresa's sisters. I think I've told this to some of you before. I knew that at least some of the sisters came from large families, about 30 sisters in class. So I asked them, as one of the sisters to keep a record, each one was to say how many children in her family. Well, the average for those 30 sisters was 8.6. The largest family was 16. Oh, a sister ever proud. My mother had 16 children. The United States is the most sterile nation in the world. Let me repeat it. The United States is the most sterile nation in the world. We are below the survival level. And except for other cultures like the Hispanics, and now, one large city after another, the Hispanic population is now over 50%. Answer, the procreation of children in marriage belongs to the essence of the gospel of life. The culture of death has so conditioned us that our preoccupation has become with preserving existing human life. But our first duty is to bring human life into the world. Already at the dawn of human history, evil is called the mother of all the living. She is our great, great, and you continue the great grandmother, every one of us. In that most fundamental sense, we are all brothers and sisters. Realizing that God has deeply entered her life, she exclaimed, quotes, I have begotten a man with the help of the Lord. The conception and procreation of children is of the essence of our faith. And I'm sure you know this. Among the Jews, believing Jews for 2,000 years were forbidden. They were forbidden to have marital intercourse during the fertile period of the wife. Pardon me. During the sterile period of the wife. In other words, they were commanded by God to reproduce themselves. And it took centuries for the church to finally approve, under specified conditions, what we now casually call natural family planning. Number 89, how are parents co-workers with God? Parents are co-workers with God by cooperating with Him who transmits His image to the new creature whom they bring into existence. From the dawn of Christian history, what we now, casually call procreation, is an article of our faith. And the first and most fundamental way that we who believe in Christ are to propagate the faith is by propagating human life. What good is preaching the gospel if you've got nobody to preach to? I would like to repeat this. When a couple visited me at the university here in Detroit, couple, two women with a sizable family, had 17 children between them. So I asked them, how do your husbands decide what principle do you use? So the one with only 7 children, she said, my husband and I always decide to lower the standard of living with every new child. I assure you, General Motors and General Electric and Ford Motor Company would not promote that. They don't care how many children you've got. They want to sell their cars and their gadgets. What an examination of conscience millions of Catholics should make on what in their judgment is more important. Their own material welfare on earth or bringing another child into this world as a prelude to filling the holes of heaven. And there's plenty of room in heaven for all the children on us that could possibly be conceived and born. The word overpopulation was coined in hell. And the name of the printing press that first published about overpopulation is the Luciferian Press. Do you hear me? Number 90. How is the love commanded by Christ shown especially in the procreation of children? Christ tells us that we are to prove our love for Him by our selfless love for others. Ah, my friends, You can chatter and gibber about selfless love till you run out of breath. But let me tell you, there is no selfless love like the love of a man and a woman who accept children. This selfless love is especially shown towards children from conception to birth. Talk about selfless love. These children are helpless, except for the loving care that the parents and others give to the weakest brothers and sisters of Christ. This is where selfless love begins. It begins in the womb of a loving mother. And it better be selfless love. They are helpless except for the loving care that parents and others give to the weakest. How weak can you be? Helpless, brothers and sisters of Christ. As he tells us, as long as you did it to one of these, the least of my brethren, you did it for me. Chapter 25, in case you may have forgotten. Chapter 25 is two prophecies. The prophecy about the destruction of Jerusalem. Read it and pray for the Jewish people. Judaism as a religion was destroyed in the year 70 AD. All that's left is Pharisaic Judaism. As I think I've said to you people, in now almost over 1900 years, the Jews, it never occurred to them to rebuild a temple for the best of reasons, because they no longer believe in offering sacrifice to Yahweh. And I've spoken in synagogues, published a book on Judaism. I love the Jews. Let's make sure that when Christ in the 25th chapter of Matthew foretold the destruction of Jerusalem, he was also foretelling the destruction of the Jewish religion. For 2,000 years, Judaism was nothing if not the religion of sacrifice. Synagogues are not temples, or they may sometimes give the synagogue the word temple as a name. That's the first prediction. Well, the second prediction in the 25th chapter is of the last day. Oh, how much theology has yet to be written in defending human life, especially unborn human life. The least of God's children, the weakest, the most helpless, are the children in the wombs of their mothers. And whatever, this is Christ talking, you did to the least of these, you did it either for me or to me. Christ is being crucified, and the lowest figure is 65 million unborn children aborted every year. Only God knows who will reach heaven. Only He does. But Christ, and He could not have been plainer, declared, remember, the road that leads to eternal life is narrow, and few there are who walk it. And the road that leads to eternal death is wide, broad, and many there are who walk that road. And many fathers of the church tell us that most of the human race will not be saved. This is not just a class, my friends. You know and I know. Sooner than any of us think, our bodies will die, will be buried, and then our bodies will rot, and there won't be anything left of us except the memory of some people who may still remember. Oh, yes, I remember Mabel. Let's see, I cannot remember her last name. People won't even remember our names. We all want to reach heaven. We sure do. And the condition for reaching heaven is, I repeat, Christ's both threat and promise. Our reaching heaven, He has assured us, only if we have spent ourselves in loving selflessly the least of Christ's children, which begins with those who are still alive in their mother's wombs. Question 91. How is sterility regarded in the Old Testament? You might wonder, why did the Pope bring this up? Well, he's the Pope, he brings up various things. So I thought I'd bring what he has to your attention. By the way, let's have questions. So, is there a box around? Is a box coming? You might make it two boxes. Take one part out of the other, please. Back to the question. How is sterility regarded in the Old Testament? In the Old Testament, sterility is dreaded as a curse. While numerous children are viewed as a blessing, at the root of this belief was and should be the realization that children are a gift from God. This principle has not changed. In fact, Christians understand more than ever, pardon me, Christians should understand more than ever the goodness and mercy of God in raising children here on earth to propagate the inhabitants of heaven. At the United Nations meeting in Beijing, as you know, the countries, especially of Asia and Africa, were the principal target of the murderers in the Western world, beginning with our president and his wife. I know I'm being taped, and I repeat my words. Whom do the wealthy nations want to depopulate? What they call the overpopulated countries of Asia and Africa. How pleased I was to read recently a statement of the Holy Father about Africa. Thank God, said the Pope, for Africa. Africa is a continent that still believes in family life. Believe me, there's vocabulary that I have, issues I could raise. I try to practice prudence. But I can tell you, before God, it is not just we as individuals, but we as nations that will be judged by the Almighty and all just God. When most of the human race goes to bed hungry every night, and we throughout the nation have all kinds of, well, dietary programs, we are the most fed country in the world. And we, may God forgive us, and we practice both contraception and abortion. How does Mary's conception of Jesus reveal the value of human life?
Father, I have to change the battery in.
Am I being amplified again? How does Mary's conception of Jesus reveal the value of human life? The moment Our Lady greeted Elizabeth at the visitation, Elizabeth identified Mary as the mother of my Lord. Given the importance of this event, I thought it was worth quoting at length from the words of St. Ambrose, quoted by the Holy Father. Quote, "The arrival of Mary and the blessings of the Lord's presence are also speedily declared. Elizabeth was the first to hear the voice." Whose voice? Mary's. "But John was the first to experience the grace." This is the beginning of Mary as the mediation of grace. She carried her divine Son in her womb. Mary spoke. Her words sounded on Elizabeth's ears. The moment Elizabeth heard Mary's voice, "John, don't tell me that unborn child is not a human being." Elizabeth was the first to hear the voice, but John was the first to experience the grace. She heard according to the order of nature. He leaped because of the mystery of grace. She recognized the arrival of Mary. He recognized the arrival of the Lord. John knew who Jesus was before he was born. The woman recognized the woman's arrival, the child, that of the child. The women